convene the Ways and Means Committee, and we just by way of an announcement as we get started here, we'll have Representative Marquardt's bill up first. We'll have to adjourn about 5 minutes before the hour so that members can get online for the House session, and then we'll reconvene after the session, complete whatever remains on the agenda. So with that, we do have a quorum present. Representative Olson, would you care to move the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the minutes from May 13, 2020.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Marquardt, would you care to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 4673. We recommend it to be placed on.
Okay, that motion is before us. And Representative Marquardt, you do have a an amendment before us.
Very good, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative Marquardt.
And what that does is basically clarifies that.
Okay, Representative Marquardt, you're phasing it for some reason, but at least with me. So Representative Marquardt has moved the A1 amendment. Representative Marquardt, could you explain the amendment?
That sounds good. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Is that coming? Okay.
Yes. Very good.
Representative Marquardt is frozen.
Can you?
I think it's on your end, Mr. Chair. I can see him, man.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like I can see. It looks like. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead. The A1 amendment basically clarifies that cities and townships under 500 can apply to the counties for any COVID-19 related expenses, and then removes some language that is not needed. So I'd ask for members' approval on that to get the bill in the correct shape I'd like to have it in.
Representative Olson, you may need to entertain that motion.
I'm seeing that. Representative Carlson, you're frozen, so we'll move forward with the A1 amendment. So discussion to the A1 amendment. Okay, seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. All right, hearing no, okay. The motion prevails and the A1 amendment.
Very good. Well, thank you, members. So, House File.
Representative Marquardt, to your bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. So House File 4673 as amended will help, you know, our counties, cities, and townships cover these huge costs of providing the necessary services due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so this bill would provide the funding for the services provided by our local heroes, those people on the front line. So that's our police officers, our firefighters, our first responders, our nurses, everyone who basically literally are out trying to save lives in our communities. Another aspect of the bill, it guarantees economic support for businesses, individuals, and families who are getting hit pretty hard during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so let me give you a little background before I go any further and explain my bill, kind of where we're at with this. So I first also want to say I appreciate the input by Representative Garofalo and Representative Carlson A. I'm not saying they support this, but their input is in the bill. So thank you for that. So under the CARES Act, which was passed on March 27th of 2020, in that was a coronavirus relief fund. And in that, $150 billion was set aside for states, tribal governments, and units of local government that exceeded 500,000 in population. And so Minnesota received about $2.2 billion from this relief fund. And in the law also said 45% had to go out to local governments. That's about $984 million. Now, specifically in the law, it stated that you would get direct payments if you were a unit of local government that exceeded 500,000 population. Only two entities in Minnesota qualify for that, and that is the County of Hennepin and the County of Ramsey. And so they received a specifically directed by law appropriation of $317 million from the U.S. Department of Treasury. And so House File 4673 deals with setting up a system to distribute the $667 million to the other units of government. So there's going to be 85 counties, 853 cities, and 1,782 townships. And so what are some of the requirements of this bill? I know some of you are familiar with it, but many might not be. So there's three primary requirements in law that local units of government in the state has to follow. Number one, it has to be necessary expenditures due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So it has to be expenditures relating to COVID-19. Number two is that it cannot be kind of replacing funds that are already accounted for in the last budget passed by the state. So that would be our budget that we passed in special session last year. And then the third criteria, it has to be expenses that were incurred between March 1st of 2020 to December 30th of this year. And so the key is kind of the expenditures must be necessary. And the Department of Treasury has set out some guidance on this. And basically, the expenditure has to be reasonably necessary for its intended use in the reasonable judgment of the government agency expending the funds. So reasonable, reasonably necessary in the reasonable judgment of those distributing the funds. So also from the Department of Treasury guidance, what are some of the uses that it can, that the funds can be used for? And this is not all inclusive, but it can deal with medical expenses, hospitals, clinics, testing, contact tracing, public health, COVID-19 related payroll expenses. So that would be for public safety, public health, healthcare, human services, expenses to facilitate compliance with COVID-19 related measures. So that could be food delivery to senior citizens, technological improvements, telework for public employees, maintaining county jails, economic support for businesses and individuals, kind of some other areas that would probably qualify, workers' compensation. One thing that was in the guidance specifically on questions that were asked, facilitate livestock depopulation incurred by producers due to the food supply chain disruptions. So that certainly is very relevant. Could prevent eviction and assist in preventing homelessness, employment and training programs necessary for people who lost jobs through COVID-19. And as I mentioned, also assist businesses with the cost of business interruptions or if they close voluntarily or just a decrease in customers. That would be proper funding for economic support. So that's not all inclusive, but to give you an idea of some of the allowable expenses according to the Department of Treasury guidance. Some of the things it cannot be used for specifically. And the thing to remember here is that this is not a general purpose aid. This is not local government aid. This is not county program aid. It's not a general purpose aid. This can only go to necessary COVID-19 expenses. And so, you know, I know that I think in a couple years, this program we can expect will be audited. And when that audit comes out, I really want to see a clean bill of health. And so I just think for everyone, that's important to remember that it's for COVID-19 expenses. So you cannot replace revenue lost for local units of government. So basically, property tax relief is not allowed. You cannot provide payroll to employees who work duties are not substantial to COVID-19. And you can't do severance pay or damage covered by insurance or something that's already covered by a federal program that you receive money on. So that's kind of some guidelines. So what does House File 4673 as amended do? So primarily three main goals, I think. Number one is to get the dollars out quickly to cities to respond to this pandemic emergency. So we know cities and counties and townships have incurred a lot of costs. The key is to get this out early. This was one of the recommendations by Representative Garofalo. And so in the bill, we have it going out June 15th of 2020, this first round. A second point is there's two rounds. Of the $667 million, it's kind of split 85% in the first round, 15% in a second round of grants. So that'd be $567 million that would go out in the first round. And then $100 million would be reserved for grants that units of governments could apply for from August 1st through December 1st. And I think this is really important. And, you know, I don't know if $100 million is the right amount. We've had folks say it should be more. But I think it's important to have something there to give the state flexibility to be able to respond quickly, if we can, to unexpected costs that might come up, dealing with new outbreaks or hotspots and extra expenses. So we think that's important to kind of leave some later on in a second round. And I guess the kind of a third main point is that this bill does guarantee, it sets aside dollars for economic support for businesses and also for individuals and families. So there would be a set amount set aside. So how does the formula work? And then I will complete here. So $567 million is going to go out on this formula. That's 85% of the $667 million. 45% go out to the counties, other than Hennepin and Ramsey, at a per capita basis, 45%. 45% of the funds would go out to the cities on a per capita basis, and that would be cities and townships with populations of 500 or more. And so basically it's about $255 million to the counties, $255 million to the cities. Then there is 10% set aside for the economic support and emergency financial assistance for businesses, individuals, and families. And that'd be about $57 million. That would go to the counties. And so if you look at the county total funds, it's about $312 million. But they would be responsible to spend up to 18% of the money they're allocated, which would be that $57 million, on designing whatever kind of system or plan they wanted to assist businesses, individuals, and families. I think that's really important that we provide that economic support, that there's a guarantee, because we know not only are there huge expenses in this fight for our local units of government, but there's huge expenses economically. And that's just as important to fighting our COVID response. And so for cities that and townships under 500 population, they would not get the initial distribution, because we know that a lot of those small cities and townships, which might be many of them under 100 population, they may have no expense at all. And this would save them a lot of administration, where if they automatically get the money, they have to figure it out and then they have to send it back. Where if you don't have any COVID-19 related expenses, You don't have any administration to have to worry about. And a lot of these small cities and townships, have part-time staff doing these type of things. But if, in fact, any of those communities under 500 have a COVID-19 related expense, they go to the county and they can apply, and it will cover any and all expenses that they have. So they are guaranteed that. And so we take it through the county where they don't have to go through the state. Just a couple other things then. So what is not spent by October 1st would go back to the coronavirus relief fund. And then, of course, there's these grants on the last $100 million that the Department of Revenue, with the Department of Employment, Economic Development, Department of Health would look at setting up grants. And so, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, that is the bill 4673 as amended.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. So we have a couple of questions in the queue, and just a reminder that we have session at 10, so we'll be wrapping up by 9:55, and if we don't get to a vote, we will do that when we come back after session adjourns. So with that, we'll go to Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Marquardt, for bringing this forward. I agree with you that it's important to get the money out right away for it to be effective and used for the purposes in which it was intended and to minimize mischief. You and I have worked in the past on LGA, and I'm familiar with the large number of rural communities and the different classes of cities and the population. And I was just wondering if you had a rough idea or an approximation of what the per capita dollar amount distribution would be for those cities over 500, and not an exact number, but just an approximate idea.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hertaus. It comes out right now on the first distribution to about $51.50 per capita for each city over 500. And then townships are at $25 per capita.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that answered my question. We can move on to the next one.
Thank you. Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I saw that Commissioner Bowerly was on the call. I just had one quick question for her, if that's all right.
Sure. Go ahead, Representative Long.
Thank you. Chair Marquardt, I appreciate you not including the Senate component that would take the Hennepin County and Ramsey County shares and give those to cities in those counties, which is a really unfair way of approaching this. But my question for Commissioner Bowerly is that those allocations came straight from the federal government, and it strikes me as potentially not something the state could even do to reallocate those amounts, since those were direct federal appropriations, and I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Chair Olson and Representative Long, I haven't thoroughly studied the legal issue, but I am unaware of the state's ability to intercept or interfere with a federal appropriation.
Thank you. Just one more question for Chair Marquardt. I certainly share your concerns for the small townships and small cities being able to track and process federal dollars, and I think having those go through the county makes some sense. It strikes me that that might apply to cities that are eligible under the bill right now, cities in the 500 range, and I'm curious why we chose 500 as a cutoff. It feels like some of those small cities may face the same challenges of tracking federal dollars that they may not be used to and having to disperse those.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Long, I'm going to tell you there's no magic to the 500. I was kind of looking in my area where I have 30 townships in Clay County, and only two of them are 500 population or more, and I've got a lot of cities. And so I just thought it could be another number, but I just thought that might work where they would have kind of more full-time administrative services to not get overburdened with administration. So in short, there's no magic to the number, certainly.
Representative Bernardi, we'll do you as the last question here before we wrap for recess. Representative Bernardi. I think she may need to be unmuted. She's...
Can you hear me?
We can hear
okay,
you now.
Thank you for unmuting. Yeah, thank you for unmuting me. I appreciate it. I have a question. So when this COVID-19 first happened, local governmental units were addressing it right away before the CARES Act came out. And my question for you is, are those the funds that they spent before the CARES Act was enacted, will those be covered as well?
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bernardi, my understanding is, according to what is right in the federal law, is costs incurred from March 1st to December 30th. So I think they could go back to March 1st.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bernardi. Representative Vogel and Representative Garofalo. Representative Vogel, do you think we could do your question in 3 minutes, or would you prefer to wait until after the recess?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think it'll take long at all.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Marquardt, for bringing this forward. One question is, in the appropriation session, it says that if the money isn't there, it will be reallocated on a different proportional basis. Is there any chance that the money could be short, that it would have been appropriated and spent, and then we'd have to go back to the general fund? Or is there a mechanism in place to ensure that there would never be more going out than had already come in?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Volo. I think the limit is a total of $667 million in this bill. So no more than that can be spent. Now, money that is not spent by local units of government by October 1st will cancel back to the overall coronavirus relief fund, which isn't the $667, but actually back to the $2.2 billion. So I don't know if I answered your question for sure on that.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify that if there had to be a reallocation, that we wouldn't have to claw back. In other words, no more money would ever be sent out than what we had access to.
Madam Chair and Representative Vogel, that's correct. There wouldn't be. Now, there's still, if somehow through an audit or something, they found out that money had not been spent correctly or so forth, there is some procedures that claw back, if you will. It's kind of through a levy that they can recapture some of those dollars.
Anything further, Representative Vogel? Okay. Representative Garofalo, we have you on the list too. I don't know if there's a closing comments, questions. If you did want to, we could maybe get this vote in if folks are willing to go close to 10, if we can see. I don't know, Representative Garofalo, how long you're imagining you might take here.
Madam Chair, I'll suggest that we just leave recess. One of the things is the Republicans in the committee, we haven't caucused this bill yet. And so I may suggest that at the completion of the House session, if you could just give us 10 or 15 minutes to kind of meet separately for a little bit. I'm supporting Chairman Marquardt's bill. I'll be voting for it. But I think it's important that there be consensus on this bill as it's going forward. And I just want to make sure that members of my caucus have a full understanding of the bill. Without being negative, there are some fault lines in this bill, Chairman Marquardt, and there's no need to, we don't need to do that right now. But I think it's very important that the House, this is one of these issues where as a legislature and as a House of Representatives, I think a strong consensus on this bill is important. I just want to make sure that I am able to address any concerns that my side of the aisle has on it before we would come back and take the vote on it. So that would be my request if the majority can allow this after the floor session. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo, yes, I think that makes good sense. And given how the timing is working out today with session and the interruption, I think that makes good sense. So what we'll plan to do is recess now. So we will come back after, we'll come back after session adjourns. So not the recess, but after session actually adjourns this afternoon, we'll come back to Ways and Means and we'll do it 15 minutes after to give the Republicans enough chance to caucus before we come back, if that's agreeable to everyone. Yeah. And with that, we will go in. Representative Garofalo, did you have your hand up to that? Or it's still up from later, earlier?
No, sorry. No. Sorry about that.
Nope, that's all right. All right, great. So with that, we are in recess, and we will see everyone back 15 minutes after session adjourns.
Reconvene the Ways and Means Committee. And being that I was closed out on the computer, Representative Marquardt, I'm not sure where we left off. Were we at the point where you had presented the bill?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, we were taking questions.
We were in the discussion mode. Okay.
Yes.
The best way to proceed then, Representative Olson, is your sound system working? Went fairly well?
Mr. Chair, can folks hear me?
Yep. Yeah, we can hear you. Why don't you finish up the Marquardt bill, being that we were in the middle of it then, if that's all right with you. And then I'll take the next bill.
Okay.
Or should I jump in?
I can finish this one if that helps you, just, and then you can start fresh at the next bill.
Okay. It's closed out for a while. Why don't you finish up the bill? And we didn't get a chance to talk in advance, but go ahead.
Okay, sounds good, Mr. Chair. So we were at the point of final discussion, and I think we had gotten through everyone that was had their hand up, and we were going to Representative Garofalo for closing comments before our final wrap-up from the GOP before going back to Representative Marquardt, if that's correct. So we'll go to Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to so thank you, Mr. Chair, Chairman Carlson, and the DFL for letting the Republicans get together and have a meeting privately. I just wanted to make sure that people were understanding the context. I don't know if any other Republicans have questions. I would just, Madam Chair, if we could just give one last shout out to those members to see if they have any questions regarding the new information they were given. If not, then I'll just give a closing statement. But
sure.
I don't see anyone raising their hands, so it looks like.
Any discussion from anybody at this point? Further discussion on House File 4673 as amended. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Representative Marquardt, thank you for the opportunity to listen to our input on this bill. Obviously, this is an important matter in terms of the federal guidance of the assistance. Thank you for incorporating the June language to get some of that money out the door to our local jurisdictions that are incurring these costs. And many times, getting reimbursement is important, but also they have cash flow issues, particularly with the level of property taxes being paid or not being paid right now. So thank you very much for doing that. I also want to congratulate you on making the smart decision to kind of take some of those funds and set them to the side into a merit-based program. I would like to have further conversations with you about that in terms of determining merit in the grant-based program, but I think it's wise that you chose to withhold those funds, and that was a good idea. I do want to highlight a significant issue of concern that's in the bill. And again, I'll be voting in favor today, and I would encourage all members of the committee to be voting in favor of it. But it's the issue of the apportionment to Hennepin and Ramsey counties. And I don't fault members of Hennepin and Ramsey County for advocating for their districts. In fact, I would expect they would. But the way this bill is designed right now, what will happen is Hennepin and Ramsey get their allocation, their per capita allocation based on population. And then for the other 85 counties, not only the city portion of those funds, but also that $100 million that Chairman Marquardt has put to the side, those pockets of those funds all come out of the 85 county allocation and are distributed to the other two counties when either through the $100 million they apply for or for all the cities. So I believe I was looking at the documents right, but in the city allocation, and perhaps I should defer to nonpartisan staff to make sure that I read this right, but
I see that in just the city allocation, $65 million is going to go to Hennepin County, even though they already are getting the full county allocation, and that $28 million is going to Ramsey County. And that's the numbers I got from the spreadsheet. I want to make sure that I'm reading right, either for nonpartisan staff or Ron, can you please confirm if those numbers are accurate for me?
Representative, or Mr. Marks, would that be best directed to you?
Perhaps Ms. Dalton?
Oh, Ms. Dalton, yes. Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe that is correct.
Okay. And so, again, Madam Chair and members, it's important that we, as a House member and as a legislature, we present a united front. And I understand that Chairman Marquardt has a more complex decision-making process than some of us do, and I appreciate that. However, this is something that DFL members, I would really like you to address privately before we go to the House floor on this bill. The per capita allocations for Hennepin and Ramsey in a time of a crisis like this should not be this level of disproportion. And I hope that our friends in the Senate and the public don't take our affirmative votes in this matter as saying that we are validating or okaying that distribution process, because we really, that level of disparity really should not be taking place. And so with that, again, Representative Marquardt, I just want to thank you for reaching out to us and working with us on this. These are intended to be for use for local funds. I want to congratulate you for not cutting the number down and trying to spend the money in our own way, that we're trusting our local partners, you're getting the money out the door. And I look forward to working with you on this in the short term and in the future. But I would just emphasize for you and for other members of the majority party, please take a look at that city issue and that $100 million issue in terms of its allocation. I do think there's room for improvement. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt.
Thank you. We'll go to Representative Marquardt for further closing comments and to renew your motion.
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. I appreciate that very much and your input on the bill and all the members' questions and concerns. And I know we don't usually hear from other folks, but I know Commissioner Bowerly, who is kind of the point person on this, is on the line, and I don't know if it would be appropriate to have her say a few words, Madam Chair, before I made my closing comments.
Sure, Representative Marquardt, sure. Yes, Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. I appreciate the leave to just offer a few thoughts from the administration. First, I want to thank Chair Marquardt and Representative Garofalo for having conversations about the use of these funds. We completely agree that it is important that we distribute at least some of this money very quickly. We know that our local government partners have been incurring costs, and the work that they do on behalf of their residents is always essential work and services, and that's especially true now. However, I would note that there is a lot we do not know yet about this pandemic. It's been compared that this is a marathon and not a sprint. I would not know about running a marathon, but it's my understanding it's 26.2 miles and then it's over. I think the difference between the pandemic and a marathon is we don't know when it will be over. The virus has mutated. And we are working across the state of Minnesota as new developments occur every day and every week. And so we would encourage reserving more than $100 million for a future sort of need-based allocation. We would recommend that we push out about half of the money now on a per capita basis, and we reserve the other half for needs that will show themselves as we move forward in time and as the state needs to respond. We will know more tomorrow than we do today. So reserving at least half of this for future distribution will allow us to respond to that changing situation. So again, I appreciate so much the work of Chair Marquardt, and thank you for the opportunity to make a few remarks. The administration believes we can best support the work of all towns, cities, and counties and all the residents of Minnesota as we move forward by providing approximately $330 million now on a per capita basis to 85 counties and other jurisdictions over a certain size, and then reserving a future amount for future decisions as we know more about the virus's spread. I would just note for a piece of a note of context, the state at this point has appropriated about $550 million total for all of the response efforts across the state. So that's by state action, the gathering of the PPE and procurement efforts, the distributions to hospitals and to schools, there are conversations about small business loans that I know are moving through legislative conversations. We've expanded states' food security programs and sent money out to local government public health. And so I think, so the number of pushing out $330 million now to local governments for their response work is certainly not inconsistent with the fact that the state itself has spent through allocations and appropriation and approval through the LAC process has spent $554 million total thus far. So we look forward to working with the legislature as we move forward and appreciate the time so very much. Thank you, Madam Chair, Chair Marquardt, and Representative Garofalo for your work on this.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Again, thank you to Representative Garofalo and other members who provided input. And just, you know, on the Hennepin and Ramsey question, which I, you know is a point of debate, you know, it is the one and only place in the statute where they, you know, provide specific guidance on and in the law on where those dollars would go. And it said for local units of government exceeding 500,000 population, and that is a direct appropriation, direct allocation that those counties have already received and are spending. And I just think there's some question as to, and even on May 11th, there was a question and answer session where you had the secretary or the assistant of Secretary of Treasury there before NCSL conference. And kind of the answers were both kind of both ways on whether or not a state could determine where those dollars go. And yet in another place, they say those allocations were, what do they say, certified separately to be distributed directly to those governments. And they, Hennepin and Ramsey, are responsible for their full allocation, and states would not be responsible for the misuse of funds by those jurisdictions, which sounds like it's pretty autonomous, those dollars that go out. So it's unclear, and, you know, this bill, there's no dollars that, you know, specifically go out to Hennepin or Ramsey County, and we want to get those dollars out quickly, and I just, with a lot of questions, I think this is the best way to do it. And the final thing I really want to say is that by leaving money off to the side for those grants, that really there are no caps for any local unit of government, no caps, unlike some of the other proposals. For example, if the city of Willmar or Pelican Rapids or Worthington, who have meat processing plants, for some reason, you know, maybe they're doing contact tracing or testing and whatever, they could go, right now, Willmar, for example, gets $1 million under this scenario. But even with another $740,000, they would be up over an $87 cap, which is in another plant. So there's no limit, and that could be the same for a county. So there could be a county, should they have real problems, that their cap could go over what Hennepin or Ramsey is right now. And so there, again, so that's, I think, a strength of this program is that it can be flexible and responsive to get to those areas where there might be the greatest need. So members, this is important. I appreciate folks' support and discussion on this. We've got a lot of everyday heroes out there on the front lines that we need to get funding and help our cities and counties and townships get that funding to them and help with economic security for folks, and also to fight this COVID-19 pandemic. So, members, thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
since calling for last discussion and giving the final word to Representative Marquardt, we do have two additional hands up. So we'll honor that and take those members. But if you could please be brief, that would be appreciated. So Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Marquardt, for your effort on this bill. And I just wanted to comment with regard to Commissioner Bowerly's last comment about wanting to hold back more of the money from the initial distribution. And I think it's important that we do get a greater percentage out to the local communities and allow them to know the resources are there if they need it so that they can start planning for such things as a primary election and in the fall election. Maybe there's some things they need to do that they can't afford to do to ensure that the public is safe in their endeavors and interactions with City Hall and or other locations. So that's just one example, but I would support the larger distribution as you have it in your bill, Representative Marquardt. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton, briefly.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Byerly said that this virus is mutating. I'd just like her to send me the information that supports that statement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, back to Representative Marquardt. Would you care to renew your motion, please?
Yes, I would like to make sure I get this right. Renew my motion that House File 4673, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
All right, the motion is before that, so we'll have Ms. Sparkman please call the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Davids?
Aye.
Davids, aye. Representative Davney?
Aye.
Davney, aye. Representative Driskowski?
Aye.
Driskowski, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hamilton?
Aye.
Hamilton, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Hertas?
Aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Long, aye. Representative Mariani?
Aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Pawlowski, excused. Representative Poppy, excused. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Scott?
Scott, aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative Vogel?
Aye.
Vogel, aye. Representative Wagenius?
Aye.
Wagenius, aye. 27 ayes, 0 nays.
Anybody who didn't get a chance to vote? Looks like we got everybody accounted for. So on 27-0, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the general register. Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Really appreciate that.
Yes, and thank you, Representative Olson, for coming to my rescue when my computer froze up. And I keep crossing my fingers as we move forward today. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1050, Representative Moran, dealing with child foster care and background studies. And Representative Olson, would you care to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the Health and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1050.
Okay, this one is a Finance Division report. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Olson?
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1050 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Moran, would you care to explain the bill?
Hello?
Yeah, Representative Moran?
Okay, yes.
I lost you temporarily there. I hope I'm not having trouble again.
No, that was me. I was on another call. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Maybe that was what happened. I'm a little nervous right now today with my computer, which has nothing to do with your presentation. I just got froze out this morning. So Representative Moran, we're at the point where the motion before us that the bill be recommended to be placed on the general register, and we were at the discussion stage. So if you would care to explain the bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Carson, and members. Okay, so the main purpose of this bill is to bring Minnesota foster care licensing standards more in line with our adoption standards. Under current law, our foster care licensing standards and processes create many more barriers for individuals, including relatives, than our adoption standards. So these inconsistencies create problems for placing children in permanent safe homes and isn't good for family preservation. This bill also brings Minnesota in line with current federal policy and recommendation relating to foster care licensing and background checks. I truly believe that it's time for Minnesota to rethink the way we license foster care providers. Unlike other providers requiring a DHS license, family foster homes are not a business. They should be a safe haven for children who can't live at home. And of course, for communities of color, the statutory barriers in our current foster care licensing statutes have a greater impact. So this law here will help remedy that disparities. So when children cannot live with their relatives in foster care and stay connected to their families, when they can do this, they have better long-term outcomes, including higher high school graduation rates, it decreases the risk of mental health disorders, and there's less overall trauma. And COVID-19 has made family visitation for children within the child welfare system more difficult, increasing access for relatives to attain foster care license during this time will make it easier for children to both remain with families, but also see families more often and consistently while they are in the system and out of home displacement. This bill has huge support. It is supported by the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administration, the County Attorney Association, several private adoption agencies, Hennepin County, the NAACP of Minnesota. There are several tribes and the Indian Child Welfare Center that is supporting this bill, Aspire Minnesota, and many constituents across a breadth of experiences and perspectives, and it provides a well thought out and negotiated balance to ensure both the safety for children, but also a more reasonable list of barriers that doesn't exclude many foster care providers who have an imperfect past. I would like to just end by saying that this is a bipartisan bill. It is supported by Representative Albright, Schumacher, Crenshaw, and Hamilton, and it has been a well thought through process that really is about the safety of children, but also just eliminating the inequities that we see between foster care providers and foster care standards and the adoption standards. And I just hope that I can get the support of the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you.
You're welcome, Ann. Is there any discussion? Representative Garofalo, did you want concluding comments, or because Representative Albright is also interested in commenting? Yeah,
I will wait, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I did not see that.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Moran and the stakeholders to this bill for the hard work of putting together a bill that supports children and families in a better way. It's vitally important that we protect those most vulnerable amongst us, and I think this goes a long ways towards making sure that children who are our greatest asset are taken care of in a meaningful way and respected for the opportunities that we can provide them going forward. So thank you again, Chair Moran.
And Representative Raffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and either for the author or for our nonpartisan staff. In reading the bill, it appears that while there's cost to this bill, we're not appropriating any funds. Is it fair to say that we are requiring the department to absorb these costs?
Representative Moran.
So, thank you, Chair Carlson and Representative Garofalo. The best part about this bill, I believe myself, is that it turned out to have, in the beginning, a fiscal note of about, I think, 120, 140K. And in the Health and Human Service Finance Committee was able to add an amendment onto this bill, which brought that cost down to, like, I believe it's at 68K right now. In 2020, I think in 2021, at 78,000. So, yes. Yes, Representative Garofalo. I believe that we can move this forward, keep kids safe, and allow the department to find ways to move this forward.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nonpartisan staff, if they could elaborate, confirm that there's no appropriation in this bill and that the fiscal costs are absorbed.
I think Mr. Berg is on. Is Mr. Berg available?
And Representative Garofalo, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, the fiscal note, as Representative Moran indicated, still shows a $68,000 net cost in 21 and $78,000 a year in the tails for the purposes of adding one FTE at the department to do statewide coordination, training, and ongoing technical assistance. The bill as it stands does not appropriate any funding for that position.
Representative Garofalo.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I think I'll be voting in favor of today's bill, but I do think it's important to point out that in some senses, this is an unfunded mandate to the department. And given the fiscal situation we're in, it's not a good idea. But I recognize that reasonable people can disagree about this and will reach their own conclusion. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Olson, would you care to renew your motion?
I renew my motion that House File 1050 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Sparkman, would you take the roll?
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Davids?
Aye.
Davids, aye. Representative Davney?
Aye.
Davney, aye. Representative Driskowski?
Aye.
Driskowski, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hamilton?
Aye.
Hamilton, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Hertas?
Aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly? Representative Lilly? Representative Long?
Aye.
Long, aye. Representative Mariani?
Aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Pawlowski, excused. Representative Poppy, excused. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative Vogel?
Aye.
Vogel, aye. Representative Wagenius? Representative Wagenius?
Aye.
Wagenius, aye. Representative Lilly?
Aye, sorry.
Lilly, aye. 27 ayes, 0 nays.
Okay, the bill has passed. The motion prevails. The bill has passed and on its way to General Peters. And thank you, Representative Moran.
Thank you, members, and Chair Carson. Thank you.
We now have House File 4611 by Representative Gomez, COVID-19 Emergency Community Relief Grant Program. Representative Olson, would you care to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 4611, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. I understand there's an amendment, the A4 amendment. Representative Gomez, do you want to take the amendment and then explain the bill?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Olson.
I move the A4 amendment for the author.
Okay, that amendment is before us. Representative Gomez, if you could explain the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the A4 is the result of some questions that we received in the first hearing, which was in the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. It adds language about reporting, quarterly reports to the Commissioner of Human Services by the entities, the community action partnerships that are distributing the grants.
Okay, so the gist of the amendment. Report. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Gomez, if you could explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So as the chair mentioned, this House File 4611 establishes the COVID-19 Emergency Community Relief Grant Fund. We are in the middle of an unprecedented economic crisis, as everyone on this committee knows very well. We're all hearing from our constituents about the pain being felt in the communities that we represent. 650 million of our fellow Minnesotans have filed for unemployment. We basically have erased all the progress that we've made in adding jobs to our economy over the past decade since in recovery from the Great Recession of 2008. And that's over 2 months. Again, 70% of our economy is driven by consumer spending, and with so many people out of work and the resulting lost wages and income, there's a real threat to our long-term economic outlook. And working class people were struggling before COVID. Even as the stock market has surged over the last 10 years, wages have stagnated while unemployment was at record lows. Unemployment in communities of color and indigenous communities was twice that of white people. And, you know, we find ourselves in a situation of increasing economic inequality where 40% of families in the country couldn't withstand an unforeseen $400. So the feds have responded to the COVID crisis and the underlying economic issues with unprecedented stimulus to keep people and businesses afloat during this uncertain time. There was the Paycheck Protection Program for businesses and a number of measures to help bolster individuals, including pandemic unemployment assistance, the unemployment insurance top-off of $600 a week through the end of July, an extension of unemployment and stimulus checks. As we found with the, you know, with the payment, the Paycheck Protection Program, a lot of small businesses were passed over by that program. Businesses with professional services were able to apply for the funds, and they were quickly depleted. And so with Executive Order 2015, DEED established the Small Business Emergency Loan Fund to supplement the aid from the federal government and get resources into businesses that had been passed over. House File 4611 takes a similar approach to the places where the stimulus falls short by getting a small one-time cash grant into the hands of Minnesotans who are left out of existing programs. These one-time payments are intended to help them pay rent, utilities, food, and needed household goods. These are dollars that will immediately begin to circulate in our communities. So as I mentioned, it's a, or I guess I didn't mention this yet. So it's a $50 million relief fund. Grant funds, it is funded from the general fund. Grant funds are to be split equally between the metro area and greater Minnesota. The funds will be provided to individuals who are experiencing a financial hardship as a result of COVID-19 and are not eligible for other programs, including those who have experienced job or wage loss but can't file for unemployment. Those who rely on income from tips or earnings not included in unemployment calculations, and those who will not qualify or will face significant difficulty receiving other federal or state assistance, including stimulus payments. Maximum grant award will be $1,500, up to $1,500. And individual awards will be given out based on needs and resources available. So the bill was drafted to most quickly and efficiently get these funds into the hands of individuals and families who need it the most. The grant funds will be awarded by the Department of Human Services to the community action agencies. Community action agencies are statewide and already have an infrastructure for distributing funds to individuals and families with need. And they will make grants to qualifying individuals either on their own or through subgrants to agencies serving culturally specific communities, which will ensure that the funds are accessible to all, particularly those communities who are disproportionately impacted by the economic downturn. So this bill is designed to alleviate pressures on families who are supporting adult children or elders or other family members with disabilities. If you're counted as a dependent of somebody else, you didn't qualify for federal stimulus payments, and the person claiming an adult, or actually anybody over 17, also didn't qualify for any payment for them. This bill will help support high school students who relied on their jobs to save for college or to support their families, but lost jobs due to this crisis, because if you're enrolled in high school, you're not eligible for unemployment. This bill will support tipped workers whose unemployment payments do not reflect the full amount of their wage loss. And it will help especially college students, mixed status families, and other new Americans who fall through the gaps. In the submitted testimony, you can find stories of individuals and families who'd be eligible for these funds. And that concludes my introduction of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the bill's author. I want to go to the bill language here so I can get the correct line for you. On line 2.1, it says that the eligible individuals would be those that will have significant difficulty getting COVID-19 related federal funds or assistance. Could you define for me significant difficulty? I'm not sure what that means.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Scott. So there are two things. I mean, we're basically like people who are just left out of the program. So those who are adult dependents, for example, or other minor or college age dependents, people who are excluded because of certain immigration statuses, certain kinds of visas are not included in the stimulus payments. People who are not required, you know, it kind of goes through them, people who are not required to file taxes, and adults who are elderly or disabled but not receiving Social Security benefits. So there's a number of kind of categories of individuals who are not able to qualify. And so this was designed to kind of be an option for people who were disqualified for various reasons.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so another question, I guess, would be, you know, Community Action has had, you know, a history of, embezzling funds and misusing funds. And so I'm wondering what specific safeguards are in here, other than just a quarterly report of the funds. What other safeguards do we have for some accountability built into this bill? It's $50 million. That's a big chunk of money.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Scott. I guess I'm aware of some issues with the Minneapolis Community Action Partnership, which doesn't exist anymore. I'm not aware of other reporting issues with Community Action Partnerships. You know, this is like a statewide network of organizations that are committed to alleviating poverty in communities across the state. They administer programs like energy assistance for the federal government. They help people apply for medical assistance, Minnesota Care, SNAP. They run Head Start programs. They run community food distribution programs. They help folks file their taxes. So I guess there's an established relationship between the Department of Human Services and the Community Action Partnerships, and I'm not aware of any other kind of issues outside of the Minneapolis problems from a number of years ago. And I have some Matt from DHS is on the call, and Francie, I believe. So I don't know if they have anything else to add about the way that the relationship between the Department of Human Services and the Community Action Partnerships goes, like in terms of oversight.
Representative Scott.
The bill's author was asking a question, asking someone from DHS to take a stab at the oversight question.
And if you would like a further answer, we can do that. I've got several names here. Representative Gomez, who was it that you referred to?
Matt Burdick and Francie Mathis, I think, are on the line. I'm not sure if one of them.
Why don't we start with Matt Burdick, if he's available.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to turn it over to my colleague, Francie, who can speak to this.
Okay, however you want to handle it, that's fine. Is she available?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Francie Mathis from Department of Human Services, and our office has a long history of working with community action agencies. After the Minneapolis situation, the legislative auditor did big audit of all of the community action agencies because of that that issue, and found that there were no other issues in the community action agencies. And that was a few years ago. But we have, our office has a team that works specifically with community action agencies. There's a robust monitoring process, and our office attends the monthly meeting with all of the CAP directors. So we have like a high touch with community action agencies.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one final question to the bill's author is, where would the $50 million be coming from, since, and I know it's the general fund, but on a larger scale, where would the money be coming from since we're in a deficit situation?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, for asking the question. I know that there's going to be an immense strain on the general fund moving forward and really difficult decisions to be made, and I know that you all discussed that in this committee frequently. So the idea with this bill is really, you know, as our leaders negotiate the budget during the end of session, I really believed strongly that this idea of taking steps to supplement the household economies of Minnesota really needed to be in the mix as we're making decisions about investments in our community moving forward. So, you know, I really think that this is designed to be kind of a tool in the toolbox to address unmet needs in our communities. And I really think that we need to be using the limited funds that we do have as a state to fill in those places where the federal stimulus has failed to reach the families who need assistance. So, you know, this idea, it has a high price tag. And the reason for that is because I don't think that in our policy responses to issues that it benefits anyone for us not to acknowledge the scale of the issue. So, you know, $50 million sounds like a lot of money, but in terms of satisfying the needs in our community, it's relatively modest. That being said, this idea is scalable. One of the benefits of using the community action agencies as a distribution mechanism is that there is an established formula and statute for distributing those funds to community action agencies across the state. So it doesn't kind of change the mechanism if the bill ends up being, you know, for less money than it is in its current written form. But yeah, I basically just thought it was really important that this idea be in the mix for, you know, the decisions that are being made for how to help families and individuals in our communities out during this time.
I think Representative Gomez answered the question very well. I would just chime in and say, in conversations that I've had with Representative Gomez and others, the goal is to keep the issue moving forward, being that we're in the very last days of the session, so that the issue of the needs that Representative Gomez described can be part of any discussions as the final budget is put together. And with that, I'll stop my comments and ask Representative Scott if you had any further questions. Otherwise, we've got a couple more members that have got questions or comments. Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I'm good. Thank you so much to the author and for your latitude, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gomez. I'm struggling to really see where the need is that you're trying to identify, your Representative Gomez. I mean, we've got COVID-19 programs coming from all over the place. I can't imagine how people are not able to be reimbursed for a portion of their losses so far, those that actually have losses. We have to realize that some people in our communities haven't had losses from this COVID-19 thing going forward. People who are deep into our welfare programs are largely taken care of by our government. That has gone on uninterrupted. And as we know, our government benefits in this state are very, very rich and plentiful. I struggle to really see where somebody is out money because of COVID-19, at least in these areas that you have identified here. A few questions. First, would any of this money be going to any of the people who would have gotten the $1,200 per person from the federal government that is being sent out as we speak?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Drazkowski. This is designed to step in for people who would not be eligible for the $1,200 stimulus for various reasons.
Mr. Chair?
Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gomez, would illegal aliens be in line to get any of this money?
Representative Gomez.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, illegal alien is not a term that is acceptable in my estimation to be applied to people who are living in our communities. This bill does help individuals with certain legal statuses, including people on H-1B visas, people with lawful permanent status, and mixed status families who are excluded from COVID-related relief payments because of the policies of the federal government. And I understand that we're not going to agree on this issue, Representative Drazkowski. You and I actually do agree on some unlikely things sometimes. I understand that you might object to people being in this country without lawful status. I want to point out to you that there are many people without lawful status in this country who are sick with COVID-19 right now because they have been helping, because they're essential frontline workers, because they've been helping to keep our food system moving, because they've been working in meat packing plants in really difficult and unsafe conditions to keep us all fed. There are people who are picking food in our fields around the country who do not have lawful status. But these are human beings who are in our communities, who go to our schools, who patronize our businesses, and who are suffering. And so I guess I would just ask you in this moment of extraordinary challenge to our country to really step into our shared humanity with people. People who we're living side by side with. And the disease doesn't care. This disease can pass across people with different immigration statuses and different citizenship statuses without regard for any of those issues. And so, again, I know that we're not going to come to accord about immigration in this conversation, but these are individuals, undocumented people in our country pay taxes, they pay sales taxes, they pay property taxes. Many, many undocumented people and families pay income taxes using individual tax identification numbers, which I'm sure that you're aware of. And they don't get, they'll pay Social Security taxes and never collect a dime of that. The reality is that people are suffering in our communities, and so we need to help out where we can.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gomez. Sounds like a yes. Representative Gomez, on the very end of the bill, you allow 10% for administrative costs out of, $5 million out of $50 million is going to go to these agencies. That's very exorbitant. Normally we see that to be in the 5 or 6% area. Why are we being extra generous to these organizations? Is that because of COVID-19 too?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski. We did an up to 10% for because you know, there are administrative costs to DHS, and then there are administrative costs to the community action partnerships who are going to be getting the money out into community. And so that seemed like a way to encompass both of those needs.
So thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gomez. It looks to me, members, like we're seeing a bill here that attempts to go around the structure of all of the many generous and numerous welfare programs that we do have already in law in order to get the money into hands of people who don't qualify for those dollars through that structure. And for that reason and others, I'll be voting no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I was just texted by Ms. Conley that Representative Mariani has had his hand up for some time and his hands up button is not working. So I'll recognize Representative Mariani at this point. Representative Mariani. Are you still with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I trust you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, very well. Thank you. So a couple of things. One is someone who 30 years ago, actually longer, more like 40 years ago, was a CAP employee. I worked for a community action agency, which, by the way, members, go back many decades in the United States and here in Minnesota. Working with low-income communities to combat poverty and to help people, get to a place where they can work and can earn income and support their families. Terrific movement that spans a good 50 years or so. And so I'm real pleased to see this bill because it does count on those caps. I do think that Representative Scott's question was a good question in terms of, you know, what's the accountability? I think that should always be the question in any of our appropriations. And so I trust that, in fact, having those relationships with state government, that, you know, those accountability measures are there. And if they're not, we may want to, strengthen the bill if it continues moving forward. I just want to comment, Representative Gomez and members, that it's not at all unusual for states and locals to be far more inclusive than what the politics of Washington, D.C. Allow Washington, D.C. to do. And I, for one, am thankful and grateful for the bipartisan investments that have come out of Washington, D.C. But it doesn't mean that they always get it right. And we know there's a lawsuit right now for U.S. citizens who are not able to claim in their households the distribution, the income support checks, because they're married to someone who's not a citizen. Not necessarily married to someone who's undocumented, just someone who's not a citizen. The point is that the federal government doesn't always get it right. They've got their own politics. We have our own politics. And part of our politics, I think, in Minnesota, is that we understand that our communities are communities and that they are communities. And that means that if somebody's hurting in that community, it's gonna hurt all of us. And so I really thank you, Representative Gomez, for coming up with a wiser way for us to make sure that whole communities are being addressed with the support that they need. Because if we don't do that, then Minnesota's recovery is only going to take longer. It's going to go slower as we, struggle to help others who just have no help be able to be part of the recovery. I think ag is a perfect example of that, Representative Gomez. There's so many different people. And we are talking about workers here. Attempting to paint this as someone who absolutely doesn't work is just not true. Without our, whether it's H-1B workers or folks with other status and yes, including some who are unlawful status. Without them, our agricultural sector in our state just falls apart, and that's just one sector. So the point here, I think, is that we have it's one of the beauties of American governance in our structure is that, yeah, there's a strong federalist system. There's also a strong state system, and by extension, local systems in which we're able to make decisions close to the ground that best benefit our communities. And so I think that's the spirit in which you offered this bill, Representative Gomez, and I really applaud you for it. I certainly support these efforts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. And Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gomez, in the body of the bill, there are a number of instances where you're talking about obviously a significant difficulty in making ends meet. And I'm just wondering with regard to someone who would request or make application for this $1,500 stipend or a grant, how would you go about verifying that they weren't receiving unemployment benefits? How would you go about verifying that they have not received any assistance due to filing taxes for the last 2 years? How would you go about verifying that an elderly adult is not receiving any type of Social Security or Medicare, Medicaid benefits? How would you go about verifying those? Could you lay out mechanically how that goes about in terms of accountability for the dollars that are expended?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright, for the question. So this is one of the benefits of using the community action partnerships to distribute this money into community is that they have, as Representative Chair Mariani talked about, you know, they have a decades-long history of serving individuals who are low income. And so they you know, they have different income eligibility guidelines for different programs that they administer. They are coming together to determine what the appropriate kind of income eligibility is. But they are able to, you know, I mean, when you apply for any kind of program, you have to provide documentation of, you know, of income that you have or have lost. For unemployment insurance, for example, there are many people that I know of who live in my district who have applied through the system and received a rejection, for example. So that would meet one of the criteria. But, you know, there are ways of showing and kind of showing your eligibility for different programs that are an established part of the way that the community action agencies do their work and assist anti-poverty efforts across the state of Minnesota.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, my next question would go to Ms. Mathis with regard to directing these funds out to the grantees. Ms. Mathis, the bill stipulates up to a 10% administrative cost. I'm just wondering from the perspective of DHS, what that would obligate your agency to in terms of, does this obligate or would this give opportunity to bring on more full-time people? Are you going to do this within the rank and file that you've got? Could you explain how you intend to administer it?
Ms. Mathis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't envision that DHS would need additional administrative capacity. This is a system that we're used to working with and we have, staff. It stretches a little bit, but not to the point of needing another staff person, I don't believe. So we would offer that 10% to the community action agencies that are allowable up to 10%. They would take a look at what they're needing to do and in their application, they would put what their administrative costs are likely to be.
Representative,
If you'll indulge me, I just have two follow-up questions. The first one is for Representative Gomez. I did notice in your last committee stop in Jobs and Economic Development that the chair, as well as others, moved it to, rather than a program responsible under deed, to the Department of Health and Human Services. I know the answer in terms of why, but I guess I'm surprised that it, its path has landed in front of Ways and Means, and it didn't go to HHS policy or HHS finance first.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. So this is sort of unusual. You know, it's the end of session. Again, as I mentioned, you know, the intent here is to keep this as an option in the mix as leadership determines end of session budget negotiations. So originally this was an appropriation from the deed commissioner. After discussion with the agencies and the administration, it was determined that, you know, because there is an urgency around getting this money into the hands of people quickly, which is why, again, we saw the federal government move with such swift action with the federal stimulus, because getting these dollars circulating in our economy as soon as possible is really like the way that these direct cash payments have the biggest impact. You know, the decision was made to run them through the community action agency partnerships because of that, again, you know, because of the established relationship with DHS, their ability to move swiftly to get this money into the hands of folks who really need it and can start spending the money. So there were no further Health and Human Services finance committees scheduled, and they had completed their work for the year by the time the determination was made to change the path of the bill. And so, you know, working with the speaker's office and the chairs of the committees impacted, it was decided that having the bill heard in this committee was an acceptable substitute for a full HHS hearing in the last 3 days of session in a global pandemic.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, I'll just finish with some comments. Well, I think Representative Gomez, the convenience of saying that HHS finance or HHS policy had closed up shop with just three days to go, certainly is in stark contrast to what we heard on the floor yesterday from Representative and Chair Majority Leader Winkler about proper vetting of bills. I think it's unfortunate that in this case we're kind of lining up a number of bills, hoping to find some funding when there is none. This is a bill that, while its intent is laudable, I think there are just too many provisions in it that have not been properly vetted. I wish that this would have been brought to any number of other committees. This is a bill that certainly needs proper vetting, and it has not been done so. So I'll be voting no.
Okay, Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you to Representative Gomez for bringing this bill forward. I know for a fact there are so many families who are struggling. They're struggling because they didn't receive unemployment insurance. They didn't receive the stimulus check. For so many reasons that you articulated. I know many of the families are having food insecurity, they're having economic insecurity and housing insecurity. Those struggles are real. We know because they call us. They live in our districts. They live afar from our districts. They're asking us to act right now. You know, for those who are in that precarious situation, they can't afford to wait. We have left too many behind as we go through the hardships caused by COVID-19. I think this is a good bill that addresses a challenge that many of our community members are experiencing when it comes to the COVID-19. we know that it's not the great equalizer, because so many of the communities that have been left out are the ones who with low income, people of color, indigenous. So this addresses a challenge that we're faced as a state. And I think it will be wise to be able to look into those struggles, as you mentioned, mixed families, youth who have been left out of the unemployment. The rent is due. So members, I'll urge you to support this bill because it sends the right message and it provides the resources to those who need the most. And we need to be there for them. So we can't afford to wait any longer. I think this is a good bill that needs to be included in our package as we end session soon. So thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Gomez.
You're welcome, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of what I wanted to say has been said so well by Representative Gomez and Representative Knorr. I always have to respond when I hear this falsehood about, oh, we have rich welfare benefits in the state. No, we don't have rich welfare benefits. So people who are on HHS committees now, I think, understand that we don't have rich welfare benefits, that the people who are getting welfare, which we now call MFIP and has been called that for, oh, at least maybe 30 years or something, that they get a very, very small amount of money. And they are in deep poverty when they're on our programs, and that most of these people are children. So I just have to speak up just to correct that falsehood that gets said again and again. It's just like go back to that same old button and push it. It is false, false, false. Other than that, I just want to thank Representative Gomez for bringing this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney. We can't hear you, Representative Dabney.
Because I hadn't unmuted yet. There we go.
There you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank Representative Gomez for bringing this forward. I know I received a number of emails as the federal government was working the federal government was working the CARES Act, where families who'd experienced layoffs had bills coming in and had older children discovered to their kind of shock and amazement that under federal law, apparently a 16-year-old is a child and a 17-year-old is not, and even if that 17-year-old had lost their job that they were using to save for college or to save for summer plans. I've had a 16-year-old. I've got a 17-year-old now. Neither of them ate less when they were 17 years old than they did when they were 16. Neither of them needed clothes any less. Neither of them participated in community activities any less. But for reasons that I can't fathom, the federal government decided that a dependent 16-year-old was worthy of $500 to help that recipient family negotiate the greatest recession we've seen since the Great Depression, but that family with a 17-year-old didn't need it. It makes no sense. And I think the state stepping in where the federal government has yet again failed makes sense. I see this less as a question of sympathy or such alike, and more a question of what sort of economy do we want Minnesota to have? How quickly do we want to come out of this recession? And how broad-based coming out of this recession do we want? Making sure that families have their needs met, as even the federal government identified those needs, but then failed them. And making sure that young people saving for college or saving for that first apartment when they want to move out, as they were before, is about building our state's economy. It's about supporting our small businesses as well as our families. We certainly do have the option of cutting off our nose to spite our face. We've got a long history of doing that, but I would counsel the committee not to do that. Thank you very much for bringing the bill forward. I hope as we meet these final days that we see the gaps from the federal government and step in to fill those. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gomez, for bringing it forward. I can understand the intent of what you're trying to do. But going back to some of the questions that Representative Albright had asked, when I go to line 1.9 and I see, to the extent practical, grants shall be made so that an approximate equal dollar amount of grants are made to individuals in the metropolitan and the non-metropolitan area. How do you define the term practical and approximately, so that when these things are administered, people can go back and say, oh yeah, that's the amount that should have gone each place?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vogel, for the question. To be honest, I think that, like, you know, to the extent practicable could probably be omitted from this bill. I believe that it's sort of a little bit of a holdover from the previous engrossment where it or the previous form, you know, the bill is introduced when the idea was to have the appropriation come from the deed commissioner to the Minnesota Council on Foundations, who had already established a grant to help folks who were falling through the cracks of the federal stimulus programs and unemployment. Because as I mentioned in my introductory comments, there's a formula in statute for disbursement of funds to the community action agencies across the state of Minnesota, and that takes into account population and different indicators of poverty, a lot of stuff from the American Community Survey. And so the way that allocation works out is roughly 50-50 between Greater Minnesota and the metro area. So again, I think, like, you know, to the extent practicable could probably be taken out, because since we're doing a formula instead, it really does end up pretty even.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other question. In that same paragraph, on line 112, it refers to culturally specific populations. Is there a definition for that? Or again, how would you allocate it, or how would the person that's administering this know exactly what those organizations or populations would be?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Bogle. Sorry. I guess probably happens. This language was included actually, like, after we started the conversations with the community action agencies across the state of Minnesota. They explained to us the relationships that they have with organizations that directly serve certain cultural populations in their geographies, and that a lot of times the best way to connect with those communities is through trusted agencies that specifically serve them, and so they already have established these relationships. You know, for example, in Worthington, there are a number of different languages and cultures represented there for various reasons. So the community action partnership that serves that area may partner with an organization that directly serves the Karen community or the Latino community in order to kind of best get those resources into the hands of people who need them, who maybe don't have a relationship directly with the community action partnership. And as I talked about in my introductory statements, and as Representative Noor spoke of, you know, this COVID is revealing underlying inequities in our systems and in our economy. As we look across the country, people of color and indigenous people and immigrants and refugees are disproportionately impacted by this disease, and also the economic impacts are disproportionately falling on low-income people, service sector workers, and people of color and indigenous people. And you can see this borne out in the disparities in the unemployment rates if you disaggregate the data by race. So this is really an attempt to to try to like try to target the resources that we do have to fill in these gaps to the folks who really need them. And so that requires us to be really thoughtful on the front end about how we're going to engage with communities that that maybe are not directly interacting with the community action agencies.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I'm not questioning the intent here, but I'm questioning the specifics and, again, vetting this thing. You know, we've heard on the floor even that things have to be vetted before they can be brought out. And I just have a lot of questions on the subjectivity of some of this stuff that I think it needs more process before we allocate appropriate $50 million that we don't have. So my suggestion would be that we run this back through the appropriate committees and make sure that everything is vetted so that it's carefully defined and can be implemented, not again against the intent, but to clearly state the intent so people know exactly where the money is going, because we're taking $50 million of taxpayer money that we don't have and allocating it to something that we're not sure of. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gomez.
Thank you. If I may, Mr. Chair, just quickly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any concluding comments, because we're great. I think done with the people with questions. So Representative Gomez.
Sounds good. Just, you know, since you guys have quoted our majority leader, I want to quote your minority leader this week on the floor, who said that, you know, around here, when you want to kill a bill, then you start talking process. So I totally respect what you're saying, but you know, we are where we are with this. So thank you.
Well, I guess another hand has come up, and it usually has the concluding comments. Representative Garofalo. Comments, I should say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, are we going to be laying this bill over, or are we voting on it today?
We're going to be voting on it today. And as I mentioned near the beginning of the meeting, when we first talked a bit about process, we're down to the last few days. And that's why it went from the Jobs Committee directly to Ways and Means. And the goal is to have the issues that were described by Representative Gomez to be part of the end of session discussions, so that the needs of this population group are on the table for discussions, and yet to be determined just how we'll be able to respond, because we all know that we have some difficult decisions ahead, but sure that the last bill had a place at the table.
Okay, Mr. Chair, my apologies. My dog is barking in the background. He's sharing his opinions on the bill, apparently.
We've covered dogs and everything with this new technology, so understand. Representative Garofalo.
Sorry, I just had to verbally command that dog.
He's for it.
And technology breakdowns, I should say. So we've had everything.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would just say that I'll be voting no on this bill, and that floor time at the end of a legislative session is precious, and I would hope that the majority sees in their wisdom to not calendar this bill on the floor. If the Senate, I don't like speaking for the Senate Republicans, but on this one I do, I can confidently say that if this bill were ever to become law, with Senate Republicans voting for it, I would jump from the top of the Capitol bill. So, I don't know, maybe that'll make them sign off on the bill. So, I'll be voting no, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. You know, I'm going to make a comment. You know, I've been in the legislature 48 years. My parents are deceased. And I was asked many times, how did you develop your political philosophy? Who are your political heroes? You know, a lot of people respond with the name of a major political figure or a major religious person or something like that as being their hero. I've always responded, my mom and dad. And to pardon me for a minute, but they're both gone. They were products of the Depression. And my dad called me on very few political issues. But on an issue like this, he would call me and he'd say, Lyndon, remember the children. And if I saw an article in the paper, I knew before the day was out, I would get a call from my dad. Because they had a very hard time during the Depression. My grandmother was a single parent raising four boys, and they had nothing. He remembered that. He had a good job. He saw to it that his kids never went without. The worst situation we might have would be they'd have to wait for payday. But if we really needed it even sooner, he found the resources. So we were well taken care of, but his political philosophy came out of the Depression. And we are right now in a depression. We need to help these people. So with that, Ms. Parkman, take the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, do we have to restate the motion? Do we do that?
You're correct. I got caught up in my own comments. Representative Olson, if you could restate the motion.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 4611, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, Ms. Parkman, if you could take the roll.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo.
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright.
No.
Albright, no. Representative Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Davids.
No.
Davids, no. Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski, no. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hamilton.
No.
Hamilton, no. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hausman.
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Hertas.
No.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Kreisha.
No.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Long, aye. Representative Mariani.
Oh, yes.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt, excused. Representative Nelson.
Most definitely, yes.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor.
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Pawlowski. Representative Pawlowski. Pawlowski, aye. Representative Poppy.
Aye.
Poppy, aye. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Scott.
No.
Scott, no. Representative Torkelson.
No.
Torkelson, no. Representative Vogel?
No.
Vogel, no. Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Wagenius, aye. 17 ayes, 11 nays.
Okay, the motion carries and the bill is on its way to the general orders. Thank you, Representative Gormaz. And tomorrow we reconvene the Ways and Means Committee. Ms. Conley, did we finally decide at 9 o'clock or 8:30? I'm not sure what you posted.
We posted 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Okay, we will reconvene then tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. With that, meeting adjourned.